It's a real privilege and honor to be here with all of you, and thanks for coming, and also a real privilege to speak with my friends here, colleagues in arms. So street medicine is a very, in a sense, it's a very small subsection of healthcare, but I think, you know, we would promote the idea that in that essence of how it's delivered and why it's delivered, there are lessons that radiate then, or could radiate through all of healthcare, to inform us how to treat our brothers and sisters, particularly those who are left out of mainstream medical care. So my involvement with this as a field began as a learner and as a teacher, seeking a classroom in which the classroom itself would force me and those that I would work with to work on someone else's terms, to as Ben said, you know, to be in their reality. So I think my earlier work was with domestic violence, and it was a profound experience for me to see how there are so many people who could be living in a certain awful reality that wasn't acknowledged, wasn't connected to by mainstream healthcare. So having worked in that arena, struggled with the issues of its prevalence and yet its stigma, I really personally felt I needed to get into an area, into an arena in which we could learn to learn from the people who were left out. Unfortunately, I have no financial relationships to disclose at this time. So again, street medicine is a unique field, and I think, you know, we try to use imagery in our work because I think it takes you there, and that's the essence of our work, is going to where people are. It's the delivery of healthcare directly to those that are living and sleeping outside of shelter. There are terms that we use here, unsheltered homeless, to distinguish them from those that utilize the shelter system mostly. Street homeless, in Europe, rough sleepers, in India, pavement dwellers. But the concept is always pretty much the same. It's almost not so much who the people are. Oftentimes it's what they're not. It's a whole series of things that they weren't able to do or they aren't able to do. So it, in some sense, it's a category of exclusion. I like this photo, and I like to put it in your consciousness as well to burn into your idea that these are the folks that we're talking about, the folks that sleep outside. Lillian Gelberg, one of my inspirations and mentors, showed me photos many years ago, probably 30, where she was out in Los Angeles, and those images actually had a lot to do with me following the path that I did in my career. So I want to thank you, Lillian, for that. As you can see in this slide, there's a lot of things intersecting here. This is an exhausted person who obviously has health issues. And photos that are really powerful to me, I keep looking at them, I see more in them. If you'll notice the pigeons in the background, when you get involved with people who are them, and particularly street people, you begin, as Pat says, you get hated by proxy for working with people who the rest of society has decided to judge because they're frustrating and troubling to them. And so many times when you're working with street people, I think people look at them like, well, why do you feed the pigeons? Why do you do that? They'll just keep coming around if you do that. And the reality is that they are us and we are them. And unless we can deal with reality and go directly to it and learn how to do that, I think all kinds of underlying health issues in our society are never going to get any better. So we have to go to the streets. I'm going to give you just a brief background of the street medicine program in Pittsburgh, which is called Operation Safety Net. And this is just to show you that maybe not quite as pretty as San Francisco, but Pittsburgh's pretty darn close. So if you guys want to come out and visit, and this is actually from a mountain that overlooks the city, so it's got one of the great skylines. You'll also notice the many bridges that we have, second most of any county in the country, and that's where a lot of our work takes place. So these are, you know, just our folks here in Pittsburgh. And in 1992, I made a break from my teaching job and decided that I needed to get out to get to know the street folks. So for a time, I didn't tell the hospital, didn't tell my insurance carrier. I just started going out, dressed more or less like a homeless person, into the areas of Pittsburgh. And I owe a great deal to my friend Mike, who was homeless for 7 years and had been doing the work. And it's a classic. You find someone in the community that knows the group, and you partner with them, and you respect their relationship. And Mike has been my good friend and teacher and guide for, lo, these 21 years, and we still work together. We developed a model which kind of was just who was interested of other folks who had been homeless and volunteer, particularly nurses, were the first, usually they're the first to get onto things. But this is a great picture to me because you have Sister Cindy, who's a nun and a nurse and has a little halo there if you can't see it. And Danny, who was a motorcycle gang member and a bank robber, had been homeless. And you can probably see his horns there. But in this photo, you can see the love that they have for each other and for the and for what they're becoming in the work that they're doing. And so those were awesome days to just begin to steal stuff from the hospital and take it out there, give away our own clothes. And in a real sense, we just felt that something really vital was coming into our lives, and that we were privileged to share the lives of the people on the street. We broke our teams up to have a formerly homeless person on every team and to do different parts of the city like the beat cops would do and get to know those areas, and developed our system from there. There's only one textbook of homeless health care that I'm actually aware of, which is Jim O'Connell's book. There still isn't a book on street medicine. So when you do this work, you know, you find that you have to invent it. And if you're wise, you'll let the people in the street teach you what it needs and keep that as your guiding principle. And that's how we worked. I like this picture for hospital administrators because this is a guy who had readmissions for bone infections of his feet after frostbite coming back over and over. And by targeting folks like him and pregnant women and high-risk folks as we began to stratify them, we realized that we could save the system a great deal of money in ER utilization and readmissions, et cetera. So it was clearly was becoming a strategic win-win kind of an activity. The impact of having your physician or healthcare provider come right into your homeless camp or into the crack house where you were, the abandoned building, was really profound in the streets. And pretty soon we would get a referral from one bridge to the next, one campsite to the next, and the practice built up pretty quickly. I like this image of Carol here because it's actually incorporated into the Street Medicine Institute logo, but it's just the idea of respecting people and listening. And that's the beginning of this, an essence of this work that leads to whatever we're able to accomplish. It's solidarity with people. So as long as there are people out there, we're going to keep going. And we're going to treat them the way we would want to be treated. As my backpack got bigger, it was just things that in Ziploc bags so that if it rained, you know, they wouldn't get ruined. But this is kind of how most folks who work in the street end up creating their thing. We were fortunate to be able to develop electronic medical records all the way back in 92. For our system. So we have a web-based system that allows us to work with people in that environment any time of day or night. And then the homeless population typically will divide itself into the people that come to you and the people that you have to go to. People here in San Francisco told me the term chase management, where you have to go and find them. And so we divide into those two rough areas, folks that come to us and the people we have to go find. But then it's always fun to be creative. In Pittsburgh, we have Riverside camps, so we go to see them. Whatever it takes is kind of one of the mantras that we have. This is a busy slide, and Pat has a better version of it, but it's just to show that within the circle, that's the streets, and we're part of the streets, but then we relate to many of the other, strategically to all the other agencies from the from the police to the emergency rooms and others, increasingly to housing. Most programs then develop a core office group, and we were fortunate enough to have the funds to do that. And this is the skeleton around which a large volunteer pool then was able to be built. People can come in not ready for prime time. You can never not be within our circle of caring if you're a street person. And that, I think, really, once people get that in their minds at the street level, that we're available 24/7, that if you're housed, we'll go see you. If you end up back under a bridge, we'll come see you. We don't judge any more than we would want to be judged. So there's a lot of philosophy that underlies this. And then we're able to use our influence. And this is Lois, we found in a snowbank, and she's getting her first primary care appointment here at Mercy. A lot of this has to do with trust, and here I'm transferring a bit of trust to another provider in the setting of the street. And as we moved along, then I realized we were really becoming a home care service. Here I'm writing a note, your doctor says he'll see you next Thursday, the one that hadn't seen him for 3 years. And so we, symbolically, the bridge in the background, we really are in a place where we can build a bridge from the street level. I call this in-reach, if we want to get into that later, but it's a process of working from the street level into the system. And it's really efficient once you get established out there. These are the kinds of things that you see and you don't know where to start with. But if you hang in there, with like we did with this 85-year-old gentleman, eventually, I call it vulture medicine. You just sit on the limb and you wait for the moment when you can do something, and we were able to get him housed here. One of the key things that I did as a domestic violence program, but later it turned out to be really useful for street medicine, is an inpatient consult service that targets street homelessness. And it is a great tool to put in the hands of health systems. So all they have to do is write the consult, and we come and we calm the homeless person down, we calm the surgeons down, we bring the street reality into the decision making, and then especially with the discharge planning, we can help try to prevent this kind of thing. Housing then is something that, thanks to Housing First dollars, we've been able to do. We've housed around 900 chronically homeless street folks in the last 9 years in apartments, and we're about 75% to 80% retention rate in housing. That's a process of maturing to the point where we could deliver that. But if you can keep a guy like this housed, you get a great deal of satisfaction. Students are integral to all of the street medicine programs that I know of, and are, I think, the heart and soul of the future. And students are always on a waiting list to come and work with the street programs that I know of. And many of them are leaders. Pat was a student of mine some years ago, and here he is with his wife, Liz. And this is our classroom. This is a classroom of the streets. I feel that every community that has folks living on the streets in the world should have a street medicine program, kind of like you'd have a fire department. And I think every health science school should have a classroom of the streets, because it is such a jewel in the crown of teaching us how to look at the people and listen to them in the context of their world. That even if you go into, otolaryngology, you're going to look at people differently after you've been out on the street and you've looked in from the outside. That's part of our goal. So networking. When I started this, I really didn't know of anybody else doing this kind of work. There were, but I didn't know about them. And I happened to go to Calcutta in 93, and I did get a chance to talk to Mother Teresa, but the person that I really came to see was Jack Prager, and we consider him really the grandfather of street medicine in the world. He was gracious enough to let me work alongside of him and see his work, and I realized that we had a common field of medicine. It just didn't have a name, but he had to solve the same kinds of issues that I was grappling with. And it was an epiphany. And after that visit, I've dedicated the last 20 years of my life and whatever I've got left to find other people that are dedicated to their own street folks and to bring medical care directly to the people. And so I got acquainted with Jim and his pioneering work, and he's really, you know, huge in inspiring so many spin-off programs and giving courage to people that are doing this kind of work and advocacy for the poor and the homeless. They continue to do it all. They do great primary care, but they one of the things that I love about Boston is that they keep going into the streets. They don't retreat from the people who are most in need, and to me that's the litmus test of a community that has a good street medicine spirit. Other folks like Donna here in Cleveland didn't know that anyone else was doing it. We were able to connect with her. And then programs began to emerge based on the work that we were doing. This is Morgantown. They actually have a spin-off program in Charleston, West Virginia. Columbus, San Juan, Puerto Rico, if you get down there, please visit Chaco's program. It's incredible. In Hawaii, Anchorage, Alaska, Copenhagen, Denmark. This is in Beijing and in Kano, Nigeria. So I've been doing a lot of traveling, and we've had a lot of people networking. And this kind of culminated in 2005 when we were able to have the first gathering ever of the people who do this work, specifically this work in Pittsburgh, at the first International Street Medicine Symposium. Jack was our keynote speaker, and Chaco made us all cry, as he always does. And each year, then, we have a International Street Medicine Symposium, the only one of its kind. This is our meeting in Puerto Rico, where we try to go into the field and actually deliver care as part of the experience. Our latest was in Salt Lake City about a month ago, and this is the group. And then we always have a student day where the students present their projects, and it's a really exciting view into the future. This is the network of most of the major areas of the world that are currently involved in our network, but it's growing. We get emails every day, every week of new, particularly schools that want to incorporate this into their protocols. So, what is this thing that we're calling street medicine? You know, at first glance, it's the delivery of care, but I think it's also something deeper. And I don't think I really have that answer well enough, but I wanted to just point to the fact that it has certain attributes. One is that it's grounded in reality. It's non-judgmental. Within our communities, it's strategically placed to influence, not just to help the care of street people, but to influence the whole community in an advocacy and collaborative organic process. We talk about person-centered care being the wave of the future. This is street work demands person-centered care. You can't do street medicine unless you can be person-centered. And it builds community. Our tagline is "Go to the people," and I'm gonna that's the famous saying by Lao Tzu, which I will get into. But literally, we go to where people are, and it has an effect. It addresses the cost and the morbidity of these individuals who are very high utilizers, and it's a way of informing and advocating from the outside the health system. It's a way of reimagining medical education because it's so connected to the social context of the problems that we grapple with. And again, I say it builds community because we see each other as connected, that we're in this together. And so much of healthcare now is divided into us and them and silos, and I think this is a really powerful way to break those silos down. So go to the people. This is when I first saw this. This is in Deschapelles, Haiti, where I was visiting the Schweitzer Hospital, and I was able to go into the Mellon's home, and in their bedroom I saw this thing that just blew my socks off. You can't read it too well here, but it's from Lao Tzu from 500 BC, so it's not exactly new. It says, "Go to the people." This is actually my dad here. "Live among them. Learn from them. Love them. Serve them. Plan with them. Start with what they know and build on what they have. And so it's a circle. You build solidarity and then unity, and then together you address the problems. And I think it reframes how healthcare can be delivered. This is our Street Medicine Institute logo. We chose it because I think as long as we remember that image, we're not going to lose our way. Keep it on the street. And we were founded in 2009. We have four purposes. The first is to help new programs. Wherever they're at, whatever their stakeholders and problems, we try to share what we know from the Institute, but also from any partners that are relevant. We want to become an increasingly good central resource for the folks who want to do this to improve what they do, to have the annual meetings where we gather the coals together and get the energy back. And then we're all very committed to making this an educational opportunity for ourselves and for our students so that we can learn how to learn. And that's our website. We're really blessed to have a great board at the Street Medicine Institute. And as was mentioned, Pat Perry is our board chair and has been in the trenches with this movement since the early days. And I'm very proud to pass the podium on to him.
Thanks.